Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something seeks to celebrate the craft of live storytelling. The Missoula community comes together for a night of shared stories, told live, focused on a theme. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was a special edition in conjunction with the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival's 10th anniversary and was recorded on February 19th, 2013 at Monk's. This edition of Tell Us Something features six storytellers telling a story based upon the theme 10. This week's story comes to us from Katie Robin Garten and is titled A Sister Story. Thank you for listening.
People. 10 years of Big Sky, round of So you might not know this, but when you go to climb Denali, which is North America's tallest peak, there's this daily ritual that absolutely sucks. When you arrive at base camp, they give you this stack of plastic bags and they're biodegradable. And every day you gotta do your business and then you have to throw that bag in a crevasse. And my sister and I, we decided to climb Denali when I was 20 and she was 21. And we would fight about who had to throw the poop bag in the crevasse, because we hated it doing it. But we would fight basically about everything. We're sisters, so that's what you do, you bicker. We would fight about who had to empty the pee bottle in the middle of the night and who had to get out of the tent first in the morning and flake the icy rope that connected us as we moved up this mountain. But there we were in Denali, and something you have to understand, or I'm gonna give you a little visualization of the mountain so you know how you move up it. But you start at 7,200 feet at base camp, and you make your way up to Camp 14,000 is what people call it. It's really creative. It's at 14,200 feet. And from there, it's the staging ground for everything going up and everything coming down. And it's pretty much a slog to make it to that point, because this mountain is huge. You gain 13,000 feet in 18 miles. In the first half, you're carrying a huge sled and a big backpack, and it's just a lot of work. And there was one day in particular, it was June 9th, and I happen to only remember that date because we kept a journal. And on this day, it was Rachel's turn to put the poop bag in the crevasse, and I was so thankful it wasn't me. And I'm sitting there, and I'm zoning out, eating my lunch, and Rachel had unclipped from our harness rope system, I don't know why, and she is going, taking care of stuff, and I hear this loud noise, and I turn around, and my 110-pound little... She's not little, she's older than me, but she's tiny, is leaping up into the air with all of her might because she had broken a snow bridge and had partially fallen into a crevasse, unroped. It's very scary. And as she makes her way back towards me, instead of hugging her and like being happy she was alive, I yelled at her. I got really angry and I just told her how stupid she was and I didn't understand why she unroped. And that's how things had been going for us. Because 2 years before that, we had been in a really bad car accident. And Rachel had been driving on with cruise control and fell asleep at the wheel, and we were going 75 miles per hour. And it was really bad. There was life flight and jaws of life to cut us out of the car. And she and I, being 14 months apart, had grown up like twins. We were inseparable. We shared best friends. I feel sorry for them. And we went to college together. And this car accident was completely... Our relationship was disintegrating. And for any of you who have siblings who are close, I'm not talking about we were in a fight. I mean, it was on the edge of not existing. There was... She felt so much guilt for almost killing the person who meant the most to her, and I was angry. I was young, and I blamed her. And for us, going on this mountaineering trip was kind of like our way to heal, But our friends thought we were like totally crazy because we hadn't resolved these issues, and we would express our like fear for losing each other with like yelling at each other, which is a very sibling thing to do when you're young. But there we were on the mountain, and on June 9th, we were heading up to Camp 14,000. And we get there, and we decide that we don't want to linger at Camp 14,000. It's kind of a big shit show, and we just wanted to get out of there. And from Camp 14,000, let me explain what happens. It's like, imagine this big basin, and it's like a ton of people. I mean, a lot of people climb this mountain. And you gain 2,000 feet up to Ridge 16,000, once again, another really creative name. And you take this ridge and you make it to High Camp, which is about 17.2. And then from High Camp, you do your summit bid. And the top of Denali sits at 20,300 feet. And so we headed out the next day. We loaded up our packs. We weren't going to do what everyone else was doing, which was you go up to the ridge and you cache a bunch of food so that if you're stuck at High Camp in a storm, you don't have to go all the way back down to get like resupplied. And I should add that there's two places on this mountain where people tend to die the most, and it's on Summit Ridge and Ridge, this 16,000 ridge, because the wind comes up so quickly and so fiercely, it just like blows people right off the mountain. And we decided to add a little adventure to this trip. We would camp there, because that just seemed like a great idea. And so we head out the next day, and it was June 10th. And we make it up to the bottom of the fixed lines. This is at like 15,000 feet. The Park Service has set these lines because there's so many people climbing this mountain that they don't want one person to fall and like domino effect and knock everyone off. So it's really steep and it's icy, so they put these lines in that you hook into and you make your way up. And it's tough, like it's really steep. And we'd been going for many days. I mean, this trip takes like a month, so we're a couple weeks in. And I just remember being on the fixed lines, and you have to step where other people have stepped. It doesn't really work. And most people are a little bit taller than us, and it's not really steps for little people, and I'm the tall one at 5'3½", and Rachel's a bit shorter than me. So we were working really hard. And Rachel had shed all of her layers because she hates like hiking really hot. And I am like perpetually cold, so I was like bundled up and down. And we make it to the top of the fixed lines. And like you would expect, the wind picked up like you wouldn't believe. A storm was rolling in big time, and it got serious really fast. And I was protected in all my layers, but Rachel was in like her very base layers of thermals and her like big alpine climbing boots. And I look over at her, and I could just tell in that moment, I could see her eyes start to glaze over like she was going to cry, and she just needed me. And I stopped what I was doing, and I went over to her, and her pants were, like, vertical in the air, and it took two of us to, like, get them down and put them on, and we get her all layered up, and we pull out the tent. And you have to understand, like, we're on this, like, tight ridge, and the wind is so fierce that the tent is like a sail. And if you lose your tent in that sort of situation, you are screwed. So we're, like, we get into this mode. We're like not talking to each other, but communicating and all those like sisterhood superpowers that we had since we were young. And we're doing it and we're nailing it and we're getting it done. We get the tent set up. We get into our big giant sleeping bags and we get cozy and we're like making hot chocolate. And we just felt euphoric. And I swear it was not just because of the lack of oxygen. We felt like we were finally starting to work together. And we got all warm and fuzzy. We were like singing songs at the top of our lungs, and thank God nobody could hear us. And we would read out loud to each other at night, and we were reading Tom Robbins, and we fell asleep. But before we did, I had this thought that went through my mind. It's so vivid. I remember thinking, holy shit, we're gonna climb this mountain. Like up until that point, I think I was convinced that it was like we had fake IDs and someone was gonna kick us out of the bar. Like, we didn't really belong there, and we didn't know what we were doing, but we did, and we just needed to work together, and that's what was happening. And I remember thinking, okay, we have 10 to go. We have 10,000 feet to go. We got to make it up, But when you're on a big mountain like this and you've got all the elements, you got to make it up and you got to make it down. And to get to up to the summit and back down to the safe spot at the bottom of the fixed lines was 10,000 feet. So the next morning, we woke up, and this storm had dropped about a foot and a half of snow on this ridge line. And no one down low was moving because they were still socked in a storm. And usually on Denali, it's a mountain that gets so highly traveled that it's usually a highway. And that whole feeling of safety in numbers applies, and you're never alone, and it should be beautiful, but it's not because people are like all around you. We were completely alone on the ridge with no path paved, new snow, and we were just moving so seamlessly with each other. It was like this symbiotic, like caterpillar-like movement up the mountain, and we were just giddy and laughing and having an amazing time. And we broke through the clouds, and it was sunny, and we couldn't believe it because everyone down low was still in a storm. And we make it up to high camp, and it's a ghost town. There's two other teams there when usually there's hundreds of people. And we settle in and we decide the next day we felt good. We were going to go for the summit. And we wake up in the morning and I have this image in my mind where, so when you're sisters and you're that close in age and you're growing up and your parents give you different gifts at the holidays, you fight about who got the better gift. It's like inevitable. And it was so severe that my parents stopped giving us different gifts. We'd get the exact same thing in the exact same color. And so we couldn't like kick that habit. So we just seemed to buy like the same thing. And so there we were getting ready in the morning. We had these bright like purple down jackets and they were matching. And we had these purple, you wear these big overboot things over your boots to keep you warm. And they were purple and matching. And we were like these two little round blueberries just like making our way up the mountain. And we made our way up the first big push, which is Denali Pass. And I remember thinking how cold it was. It was the coldest I had ever been in my life. And with every step I took, I would kick my foot against the ice to like remind my body that it was there because it was so cold. And to breathe was really difficult. When you're in, like, when the globe isn't perfectly round, so when you're in Alaska and you're at 20,000 feet, that's kind of equivalent to 24,000 feet in the Himalayas, so you're high. There's not a lot of oxygen. So it was tough for us, and we're moving along, and we're just being so supportive, and are you, you know, you want a bite of my cookie, and just, like, really nice, no more yelling, and we make our way across this big thing called Football Field, and we make it to the bottom of Pig Hill, which is this bitch of a hill that you think you're so close, but you're not. You have to go up this slope that's really steep and long, and at the top of that is Summit Ridge. And at this point, I'm in the lead, and I'm just mustering up all the energy I had, just moving at a solid pace, wanting Rachel to think that I was just like, because I'm in front, doing good, and all I could think about was, I have to pee so bad. I have to pee so bad. I had to pee for hours, but I didn't want to stop because I was worried I wouldn't get going again, and I was also worried I would get really cold. So we make it to the top of Pig Hill, and there's this plateau, this short little stopping spot that's actually flat enough that you can move around, and from that point, you're so close to the summit. I mean, it's like 200 feet away, but it's a knife-edge ridge. And the weather that day was not good. One team, there were three of us out there that day, one team had turned around because the wind and the weather was too bad, and the other team had summited long before us, so we're alone out there. And we knew that we were going to have to set protection as we moved along that ridge so we wouldn't get blown off. And when I have to pee really bad, I wiggle, like, really badly. And I knew that I had this, like, thought in my mind that as I moved along the ridge and I was, like, hammering in a picket with my ice axe, I would be wiggling so hard that I couldn't get it in, and a gust of wind would just come and like blow me off the mountain. So I looked at Rachel and I just basically was like, I gotta pee. So when you're a woman and you're on a glacier, peeing isn't as easy as just kind of like whipping it out. You're wearing a harness, and we couldn't afford the really fancy, what they're called, Lady J's, which are basically these fancy pee funnels. We went to Walmart and we found the 99-cent oil filters. And hers was blue and mine was orange. And we had these big carabiners and we'd hook them to our harness. And we would, like, they just dangle as we made our way up the mountain. And so I took out my pee funnel and I was like, I'm going to do it. And you have zipper, like, in your crotch. And I unzippered. And I knew the moment I did that I was screwed. It was so cold. If I had any warmth in me, it was gone. But I'm like, I got to pee. And I fiddle with my carabiner and I get the pee funnel down there. And I'm thinking, God, this could not be any worse. Do you guys remember the Christmas story? You know the little boy with his tongue in the pool? I'm not exaggerating. It was bad. And I was done. And Rachel looked over at me. And she knew in that moment, I needed her. And we didn't have to talk. It was just like this unspoken understanding what needed to happen. I mean, when you're up and you're at that sort of place, like you have to make really quick decisions. And we had a split second to decide between hypothermia and being stuck up on the mountain or making the summit. And she made the decision for us. And she did it for me to protect me because she loved me. And we turned around. We didn't get the summit. And as we made our way back down that full 10,000 feet back down to the safe spot, there was no regret, and there was no judgment, and there was no blame. I didn't blame her for the car accident, and she definitely didn't blame me for the loss of that summit. Because we were just so happy. I mean, like, we had each other again. And a couple days ago, I got a phone call, and it was Rachel, and she was in labor 3 weeks before she thought she would be. And I was on the next plane out of town. I got back last night. And I got to spend that first 24 hours with my first niece. The second one was on the way, and she's another girl. And I spent that 24 hours talking how awesome it is to be a sister. So that's my story.
This edition of Tell Us Something is brought to you by the bookstore at the University of Montana, the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival, and Monks. Tell Us Something would like to thank the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, staff, and faculty of the University of Montana, as well as the general Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Monks, regularly bringing Missoula great live music. MonksBarMT.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. The Big Sky Documentary Film Festival, bringing amazing documentary films to the Missoula community for 10 years. BigSkyFilmFest.org. Jonathan Marquis, illustrator, artist, and community organizer. JonathanMarquis.com. That's Marquis with a Q. Matt LaRubio, screen printing done right. MLaRubio@gmail.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for funky gifts, cards, and music. Great people, great music. RockinRudy's.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at cashforjunkersmusic.com. Find us on twitter.com/PSST. Tell us. And on Facebook and at tellussomething.org. Interested in telling a story? Call 406-203-4683 or email pst.tell.us.something@gmail.com to pitch your story. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours?